With 25 years of touring and recording, the Dallas-based rock band Old 97s are no strangers to music venues up and down I-55 and I-57. GLT contributor Steve Fast speaks with lead singer and songwriter Rhett Miller about how road trips to Illinois helped give birth to the band and how keeping on the move keeps him motivated.
Old 97s hail from Dallas, Texas, but Illinois locations get plenty of shout-outs in their songs like Champaign, Illinois, The L, and even Bloomington.
Bloomington, Bloomington, where the rest of the world is over and done. Oh, you'll still be the only one.
So when lead singer Rhett Miller is asked about the Illinois connections, he says,
"Funny you should ask. There was a time when we had just started the band, and we were playing a lot in Dallas primarily, a little bit in Austin, but we weren't really breaking through in any major way. And I did a stint as a touring guitarist in a band called Killbilly that had befriended the folks at Bloodshot Records. And we came through Chicago. I made friends with a lot of the folks, including Nan Morshaw and Rob Miller at Bloodshot Records. So when the Old 97s started touring, like, we made a beeline for Chicago. There's something about that corridor, right? The north-south corridor. You go from Dallas to Chicago pretty easily. You stop at St. Louis on the way. Maybe on the way there and back, you stop in Champaign, maybe Bloomington. That was our first touring, and we would go to Chicago whenever we could. And it really started to click in Chicago in a way that it wasn't in Dallas. And we started to sell out clubs in Chicago. And then when folks in Dallas got wind of that, then all of a sudden, our stock rose in our hometown. I mean, I would say that we owe at least the precocious timing of our career to the fabulous taste of the music fans in Illinois.
So getting on the road is what kicked off your career and remains the lifeline of what you do. In addition to Old 97 shows, you also do a lot of solo shows. You wrote a book of kids' poetry, and you did a book tour. You're busy.
Yeah. In this kind of life, I mean, you have to work. Maybe that's true in every discipline and in every weird job. But for sure in music in this era, there's no real money in recorded music. And so you just go out and play gigs, which fortunately, I really love that. The only downside is that I miss my kids when I'm out on the road. But now that they're teenagers, how much longer is that even going to last? So I love to tour. I do it as much as I can, you know, get away with. And I will always come back.
But it's not all rosy, I'd imagine. The song, "I Don't Want to Die in This Town," from the last Old 97s album, that sounds like it'd only be written by somebody that's a little road weary.
How did I get here? Where was I headed? You know I can't recall.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote that with my friend Salim Nirala, who's produced a bunch of records for the Old 97s. He usually comes at me with a title or a concept. And then I just sit down and start trying to figure out how to make it work. And in that case, there was a story about Frank Sinatra in his later years having a minor heart event on stage in Richmond, Virginia. And Richmond, Virginia, even to this day, can be, you know, I don't mean to speak ill of any city, but it's a little uptight. It's a little conservative. So the story, perhaps apocryphal, was that he ran off stage and out of the venue, just in the middle of the song, just jumped off stage, ran out stage, jumped in the town car and yelled at the driver, "Get me out of here. I don't want to die in this town." And so when he told me that story, I thought, God, that kind of feels like every day on this job. You know, it's like you just got to keep moving. You know, it's like a shark. If you stop swimming, you'll die. It's a weird job. And you always feel like you're just kind of chasing something that you can never catch. But, you know, I like it. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Step on the gas, get out of here. I don't want to die in this town. Put it in the past in the rearview mirror. I don't want to die in this.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm correspondent Steve Fast with Rhett Miller of the Old 97s. They're playing this Wednesday in Bloomington Normal. Rhett, since the last Old 97s record, you've released a solo album, and that record has a lot of what seems to be more personal material. At the same time, you've opened yourself up and been an advocate for mental health awareness and suicide prevention.
Yeah, I got some advice pretty early on in my solo career, especially, where I was told, don't write anything that's too self-referential because it won't ever be able to achieve a universality that you always kind of want with your work. And I really bought that. And I think that if you're navel gazing, if you're diary reading, these things that I always kind of think of as being, you know, kind of gross ways to go about trying to cash in on your inner life, I do think that that can sort of keep people away and turn people off. But that said, this deep into a career, I felt like there was something to be said for going there in a way that I really hadn't before, because I thought, you know, maybe I've learned enough where I can walk the fine line and make it still feel universal, even if I'm writing stuff that's more, you know, autobiographical, just because I finally felt like I could maybe handle it in a way that didn't feel yucky, you know, that felt authentic.
You look at a song like The Human Condition, and so something like that, you are talking about things that you've talked about outside of your work when you've been an advocate for mental health awareness, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because so much of the organizations with which I've been lucky enough to work, who really do a lot of like work on the ground to help with suicide prevention and mental health awareness, it's all about destigmatizing that conversation. So, you know, when I finally kind of sat down to deal with, you know, my own history of depression, suicide attempt, and the things that I sort of tackle in oblique ways at times, but, you know, as directly as I ever have, or more directly than I ever have on this record, I felt like, I mean, that's the idea, is that we want to destigmatize it. We want to just say, like, you know, guess what? This is true. And it's, maybe it's ugly, but it's the ugly truth. And I'd rather talk about that than let it be as shameful as it kind of has been over the years.
In the past, you talked about your admiration of the work of Central Illinois native, Illinois State professor, formerly David Foster Wallace. You said he was a hero of yours. And he sadly took his own life after a prolonged battle with severe depression and anxiety. And as somebody that is taking in, as a fan and as an influence, somebody else's work, did that lead you in any way to want to talk more about it, to help other people, to do some of the things that you've done overtly and less overtly?
Absolutely. Just the other day, I was in Los Angeles talking to a friend of mine who's a novelist, and we both have admired David Foster Wallace for years and years. And, you know, we were just sort of, even now, even what, 10 years later, we were wrestling with, how did he get to that point? The incredible sadness that someone so brilliant could only see that as as a solution. It's just, it's so, I feel like I end up saying this exact sentence every single day these days in so many different situations, but it's just so hard to be a human being. You know, you get all these feelings. I feel like today's world isn't doing any of us any favors, the ways in which so many things seem to be easier, but they wind up making it so much harder, and the things that are supposed to bring us together wind up making us feel more isolated. Now that I'm the father of two teenage kids, you know, I talk to them all the time about, they're smart kids. And I mean, it's, if ignorance is bliss, then the opposite, there's got to be some correlation there. And it's just such a tricky thing. But yeah, I think about David Foster Wallace all the time, how much we lost when we lost him. But, you know, what a sort of a beautiful legacy he did leave us. What a body of work he left behind.
The human condition is incurable. No one here gets out of here alive. These moments of transcendence are as close as we will get. I, for one, am happy we survived.
Something that you just alluded to a little bit was the challenge in the digital age of connecting, even with loved ones. Even though we have all these ways to connect, we seem a little more lonely. You touched on that a little bit on your solo album with the song, I Used to Write in Notebooks.
I used to write in notebooks. I used to read maps. I used to send letters. I used to take naps.
Yeah, I mean, technology that sort of freaks me out. It was funny when my son came to me and he said that that was his favorite song on the record. And I asked him why. He goes, well, you know, because I think people can relate because they've all got their phones all the time and they all have pictures of each other on their phones. Okay, I'll take that. I've gotten some grief because they're like, but you still do write in notebooks. I'm like, yeah, it's true. I wrestled with that song a lot because there's such a risk inherent in any observation like that of sounding like, you know, the cranky old guy. I was better when you called a time and temperature, you know, whatever. Every night I sing these songs, and the only details in the lyrics that have aged in a really weird way to me, the details about telephones have changed so much. And some of them have almost come full circle. Like there's a line in one of my songs about telephones make strangers out of lovers. And when I wrote it, I was really envisioning people standing in the rain on a payphone, arguing with their significant other, and just the distance and the way that that could make you, no matter how far away you were, that process made you feel even so much further. But now it's like this whole other way in which telephones make strangers out of you. You could be laying in bed next to each other, but you're a million miles away because you're both just sucked into your feed, looking at everybody else's pictures.
Telephones make strangers out of lovers. Whiskey makes strangers out of girls.
Now, you filled a lot of notebooks with songs, and so you've worked up quite the catalog. You know, a lot of your contemporaries, bands that started their careers in the early 90s that are still going, they're not releasing a new record every few years. They're still touring, still making a living. But it seems like the old 97s are a little bit different in that there's an audience out there for your new material.
Man, I do think about that a lot. I mean, it's a joke that I make with a band and with friends sometimes, like, well, when is it enough? You know, like, was that enough? Is this record enough? Like, at some point, the market for music that I make will be saturated, and we'll just, okay, that's good. That's enough. Now just, you can keep doing it, but these are all the songs you're ever going to play or make. But I don't know, man. I think that one of the unintended benefits of never having broken through on a larger scale is that we never got pinned to a specific time or a specific era or movement. We will always be lumped in with the 90s alt country indie rock thing. But I think you're right. I think that we've been able to put out records that, you know, to varying degrees over the years, contain songs that people want to hear at our shows. But I do think that the unintended benefit is that we get to keep making records and we never have to become a nostalgia act. Writing songs and performing songs is something I really love. But yeah, I'd like to keep making music, and I hope that it keeps appealing to our listeners.
GLT contributor Steve Fast speaking with Rhett Miller of Old 97s. Miller and his band Old 97s play The Castle in Bloomington Wednesday night.